ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. Dave Allen is my co-host today, and we are going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Friday, August 2nd, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Friday, Melody, and happy birthday to my sister, Kathy, who is working as a psychiatric nurse as we speak.
Oh, well, happy birthday. Happy. I'm glad you didn't tell us her age.
No, I stopped short of that because I know that I'd be in the doghouse.
At least you guys do learn something every now and then.
too infrequently, apparently.
Well, happy birthday to Kathy. And we kind of had an up and down gold market here in these past couple of days. So I'm going to go right to the gold market. And, I guess if I was a parent of gold, I'd be very proud of it. I'd be very proud of the performance of gold for this week. I mean, it's been hit. We barely held 1,400, and today we're looking at $1,442 in the spot market, and that is down $3.80. And I want to thank Butch for filling in for me yesterday. Just had to take care of some things. And so I hope he gave you the numbers. It was an incredible day yesterday. And after the news of the tariffs from China were coming on again in beginning September, and gold rebounded 30 bucks. So it was 30 plus bucks. So it was an incredible day for gold yesterday. And silver today is still holding $16.29, but it's down 11 pennies today. Platinum was down $8 at $848, with palladium down 14 at $1,417. The USDX today was down 0.29 at 98.08, so still above that 98 level. So I could see why gold is doing what it's doing. Of course, crude oil rebounded. That was up 1.38 after its big dive yesterday of 6%? 55.33. It was at least 6%, at least one time during the day, if not more. So oil did rebound just a little. The markets, we were down, another 300 points earlier today, but it did rebound. And we're looking at the Dow, 98 points at 26,484. The NASDAQ, though, was down 1.3%, a little over 1.3% at 8,000, holding that level, 8,004. The S&P was down 21 points at 2,932. This is what I just can't believe. Well, I did call it. Well, I did say 150. I did ask you one day if we'd be getting down to 150, and we both thought that we would. You concurred, and here we are, just not too far away from 1.5% at 1.86. So that was an incredible drop for the 10-year yield. What I find interesting, though, that I didn't see any reports. I mean, we certainly have been talking about the European, Asian markets, the other world markets, you know, how they've been, their economies have been, you know, not doing so well, all the concerns. And, of course, nobody talks about a contagion because you don't want to do that. But, of course, there's a contagion. How silly that there wouldn't be. But the European and Asian markets were all down big overnight, all more than 2%. Germany was down 3%. So big hits on the foreign markets. So we were able to I don't think that they were actually following our market, but that's what you're going to hear. I think they were falling on their own fundamentals, and we didn't do so bad today. Our fear, the fear and greed index, that was holding in around 59%. We had a big drop in that down to 39. So it's a lot of interesting things going on there, Dave. So we did see gold steady. As I mentioned, the dollar retreated. We had a pretty lackluster U.S. jobs data today, and we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. So, gold has been supported by the big push by the Fed and other global major central banks to lower rates, And there's more and more articles that I'm reading about how these central banks are buying up gold, record buys on gold, not sells, record buys. And, you know, one thing we have to remember, too, it was just earlier this year that they did the, what am I thinking of, where the central banks had to...
Where are you? You thinking about LIBOR?
No. Drum roll, please. Beefing up their reserves of gold, exactly, where gold is now, where they monetize gold. Anyway, getting old, folks.
We'll call that a ding, ding, ding.
I'm getting old at 39, so, all right. So, the Basel Accord. Hello. The Basel Accord, when they had monetized. So, again, you have a lot of these central banks out there buying gold. Is that all related? Possibly. Possibly. But, again, we all know this is all about debt. It isn't about anything else. So, So the only thing that really is restraining gold a little bit is the strength that we saw in the dollar. And we'll continue to see a little pressure on that as we go forward, Dave.
Yeah, you know, I think that data pointing to slower job growth, particularly the July jobs report, and coupled with escalating trade tensions, should this 10% tariff kick in on the remaining Chinese goods, that could give the Fed the ammunition a majority of its policymakers needs to cut interest rates by another 25 basis points next month or September. You know, stocks and, you know, most treasury yields fell today. In fact, I think they ended up all falling as of the close.
Let me ask you a quick question. I don't want to interrupt, but you said something there that was important. You said that adding the tariffs would put pressure on the Fed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, who are the tariffs really targeting? Is it really targeting China?
Well, that's
what... Or is it truly targeting the Fed? Because even President Trump had said that he had wanted the a half a basis point, not a quarter, a half a basis point. The Fed didn't do it. They did the quarter point with discussions that they might not do anymore based on the data and so forth. He comes out shortly thereafter. Or is it just a combination of a reaction? Or is he truly targeting the Fed more so than even China to get those rates lower?
I can't read this administration. I don't know. I mean, tariffs certainly aren't going to hurt China the most. They're going to hurt American consumers the most, as the current round have hurt American farmers and other manufacturers the most thus far. But, I mean, it could very well be that the threat of these additional tariffs, and even if they're implemented, is little more than, you know, a move to give the Fed, you know, justification to, you know, implement another round of rate cuts in the coming month or two.
I mean, look what it did to the 10-year yield. I mean, I don't know if anybody is surprised as I am, but I'm a little surprised at the depth of the drop.
I'll look into it over the weekend to see if there was something going on with an auction other than the rate cut that led to such a drastic drop. Now that for sure, I mean, Fed funds rate and, you know, major consumer loans like mortgages in particular are just indirectly tied together. But the major correlation between mortgage rates and other consumer loans is, as you know, a lot of listeners know, is the bellwether 10-year treasury bond. And so, you know, that we could certainly, I mean, next week when we talk about housing starts and mortgage application rates, we'll see what the impact will have been in the short term anyway.
So, but because wouldn't you actually see the opposite, Dave? The dollar truly weakening with that type of a drop?
Well, you would sure think so.
And we didn't get it?
You would sure think so. Now, you know, there might be some other things going on there, you know, in the foreign exchange markets, you know, where, you know, it's not just a direct relationship between, you know, those moves. So,
okay. All right. I'm done with my question. I just found that kind of fascinating because when you said that, it triggered. It went ding, ding, ding. He's not threatening the 10% on China products, you know, for a trade deal. I think it's more of an impact towards the Fed. But anyway, so.
Yeah, he can back off the threat because by then trade talks will have, regain some momentum toward a solution that may or may not happen in the next 5 or 10 years.
Go ahead and tell us about the non-farm payrolls. That was increased by how many?
Well, it looks like 164,000. Now, you know, we'll see next month when the revisions come in because there is a major revision to June's. Was it June or May's? Well, we'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, in any event, you know, the government reported that these non-farm payrolls, rose in line with expectations last month, the unemployment rate remaining at 3.7%. Excuse me. Amid a sharp jump in the size of the labor force to its highest reported level ever. You know, the Labor Department reported this morning that payrolls again increased 164,000, just 1,000 below the forecasted amount. It's also the average monthly gain for the year. And last year, by contrast, the economy created about 223,000 jobs a month. Now, wages also continued to increase with a year-over-year gain of 3.2%, topping by 0.1 percentage point expectations. Average weekly hours, however, edged slightly lower to 34.3 hours. Economists had expected the unemployment rate to drop to 3.6%, which would have tied the 50-year low.
Well, you know, there was an influx of about 370,000 new workers to the labor force, and of course that brought the participation rate up to 63% at its highest since March. So the total labor force is 163.4 million, and that sets another record high. And this report seems to illustrate that for, you know, supposedly all the concerns over weak global growth and trade policy, our domestic economy still seems to be holding up reasonably well. At least if you view the numbers reported by the government, and if you can believe their numbers, and of course, you know, that's what we do. We tear apart their numbers to show you, you know, just how, you know, and John Williams at ShadowStats, of course, he is, he's known for bringing the real numbers the way they really are. But so kind of interesting there, Dave. What about the breakdown of these job services? Anything interesting in there?
No, like sort of consistent with what we had reported earlier in the week, at least in terms of, you know, sector. Professional technical services jobs led the way with 31,000 new positions, followed right behind by healthcare at 30,000. Interestingly, jobs in the manufacturing sector increased by 16,000. Manufacturing hours worked fell a little to 40.4, and that's the lowest level in 8 years. Now, interesting, and I said, you know, let's wait till next year to see what this $164,000 really ends up. You know, the June's 224,000 original count was cut to 193, while May's already, you know, anemic 72,000 original count fell to 62. So total revisions of 41,000, total revisions downward from previous estimates. So we'll have to wait and see how the current months actually ends up when we hear next month's reporting around the end of the month.
You know, it just always amazes me, the revisions. I mean, those are big revisions, you know. But, you know, when you're touting 224, I remember all the big headlines, 224 jobs created, you know. It wouldn't have been the big headlines if it was, 193.
Yeah, it goes, this goes to show the, I guess there are a number of ways to characterize this kind of forecasting, but it certainly is an inexact science with all sorts of factors involved in, coming up with assumptions in addition to actual numbers that are reported by companies.
And this is the one that always gets me, the consumer sentiment. You know, that's holding steady in July. It's like, well, most consumers out there don't have a clue what's going on. So, yeah, they're always happy as long as they got money and credit cards to spend. But, you know, and they, they're near historically elevated levels. And you have expectations of improved later in the month. It's a strong labor market. Kind of offset any worries about, you know, slower job growth and trade tensions. The University of Michigan's final sentiment index held at 98.4. And let's see if there's anything. So the mood among Americans remains stable. And amid the low unemployment, that's helping to support the personal consumption. And, of course, we all know that personal consumption is the biggest driver of second quarter economic growth. So,
yeah, you know, it does make you scratch your head, doesn't it? Just so many mixed signals. Although I guess we can agree that at least in concept, you know, this consumer sentiment seems to be consistent with, you know, how consumer spending seems to be propping up the economy, slowing, you know, as it is into now the, you know, getting into the heart of the third quarter.
Well, you know, there's more bad news for retail. You know, again, these job numbers don't all seem to, you know, equal. 1 and 1 does not equal 2 in the world of the American economic numbers, but any government numbers, I should say. But the numbers we do have is we're heading into a break right now. It's that time, and we'll be back here in just a few short minutes. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melanie Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And, of course, you can sign up for a weekly newsletter and, of course, Dave's blogs, and which one will be going out today. And we'll be talking about that here in just a little bit. But first, let's finish up on more bad news for retail.
Oh, boy. Well, home improvement retailer Lowe's has told thousands of its workers that their jobs are being eliminated. The company reportedly plans to outsource the jobs of maintenance and assembly workers to third-party companies. It's a shame. The assembly workers put together products such as wheelbarrows and grills and the like. Their statement about this said, "We are moving to third-party assemblers and facility services to allow Lowe's store associates to spend more time on the sales floor serving customers. Associates who were in these positions will be given transition pay and have the opportunity to apply for open roles at Lowe's." Company said in a security filing earlier this year that it has roughly 190,000 full-time employees and a little over 110,000, that is, part-time workers.
What I want to know is, where are the third-party assemblers and facility services?
Well, that would be an excellent question to ask. You know, are they here? Are they in the States?
Highly unlikely.
Are they in Mexico? Are they in Thailand? Are they in Vietnam? Singapore, where workers there get paid a fraction of what they do here? Interesting question. We'll have to look further into that, particularly as, other stores are being added to this list.
I had no idea that they assembled things. Did you know?
I happened to. I just happened to have a couple of friends who work at Home Depots, and just know that one of them is, her job actually, it's a she, is an assembler. And she even assembles lawnmowers.
So they assemble them once a customer buys them and assembles them for the customer, so something like that wouldn't be outsourced to another country that would...
Well, these are assembled prior to being put out on the floor for sale. So, things that, other things that don't come in a box, that the customer has to assemble at home. But these are, for those things that we normally see, on the floors.
On the floors.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see. What else is important? We see these store closures are certainly a bigger trend in retail. And this year so far, there's been more than 7,000 store closures that have been announced by U.S. retailers. And, of course, that's according to CoreSite Research. And it could top 12,000 by the end of the year. And, of course, it would be setting a new record, Dave.
Jeez, that's crazy. Yeah, 5524 last year, over 8,117. That's too bad. Another, the plus-size retail clothing company, Avenue, told its staffers that, you know, if the company can't find a buyer in 2 months, the company is going to shut down and all of its employees will lose their jobs. But in this case, adding insult to injury, the employees were told that they would not be paid any severance pay. That's certainly a sad situation for those folks. Pizza Hut, also owned by Yum Brands, said it's going to be closing 500 eat-in restaurants over the next 2 years. And they're going to, it sounds like they're putting a bigger emphasis on these modern express stores. Huh. So, yeah, there you go. It just keeps getting... I don't know what happens to all of these stores. The unmalling and the unstripping of American roadways and communities, Melly.
The latest Lombardi letter says that the central banks could send gold prices to $2,000 an ounce and beyond. And, of course, well, we're not going to argue that. I mean, we've been saying that for years and years and years. But here's another one. He said, don't ignore the central banks if you're trying to figure out where the price of gold could go next. He says, to imagine you're a governor of a central bank in an emerging economy. You know your foreign exchange reserves are filled with U.S. dollars. You know that the value of the U.S. dollar is expected to be volatile. So keeping in mind, your duty as a central banker is to preserve the wealth of your respective nation. So what do you do to preserve wealth?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to buy stocks? No. Are you going to buy bonds? Are you going to buy currencies?
No.
What are you going to do? You're going to buy gold, ladies and gentlemen. It really
ding, ding, ding.
It really is just as simple as that, isn't it, Dave?
You know, some things are not difficult. It takes a little bit of clarity and patience. You know, gold's a global currency. It's a great hedge against currency devaluation. You know, in case you didn't know, central banks from especially emerging economies are already working very hard to diversify their reserves. You know, central banks from places in Russia, China, Poland too, interestingly, bought tons of gold recently, literally. India's been dipping its toes into the gold market as well.
So, yes, ladies and gentlemen, the central banks, you're supposed to be your own central bank. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. You know, I saw a report, and I think this is interesting. I don't know if Butch had touched on it yesterday, but we're going to do it today, too. I think it's important. I've heard some comments that, you know, I almost kind of agree with. But we know President Trump took to Twitter this morning to downplay a series of North Korean ballistic missile launches. And Kim Jong-un in North Korea tested 3 short-range missiles over the last number of days. President Trump wrote, "These missiles' tests are not a violation of our signed Singapore agreement, nor was there discussion of short-range missiles when we shook hands." And he said, saying that Kim does not want to disappoint me with a violation of trust. He will do the right thing because he is far too smart not to, and he does not want to disappoint his friend, President Trump. Trump's tweet comes a day after North Korea again has launched these 2 short-range ballistic missiles into the sea.
Yeah, pretty scary stuff, especially, with the story we'll talk about next. But you know, these tests this week come in the heels of an earlier test last month that marked the first time since Kim and Trump agreed in June to revive the denuclearization talks. As we know, the summit between the 2 late leaders in February failed to secure any deal. North Korea is the only nation to have tested nuclear weapons in this century. and spent most of Donald Trump's first year in office perfecting its nuclear arsenal, if a nuclear arsenal can ever be perfected. So, in any event, you know, the newest member of this exclusive club has stopped testing its nukes for now, you know, as the U.S. and international community offer the possibility of relief from economic sanctions, which are crippling the North Korean nation-state and its people.
Well, you know, as you mentioned, North Korea has conducted its most powerful nuclear test, and it launched its first ever intercontinental ballistic missile. It threatened to send missiles into the waters near the U.S. territory of Guam. Wouldn't Guam be short?
You know, I forget the mileage from there. You know, I'm pretty sure it would be in the intermediate or medium range and not the short, but I might be wrong. I'm just not sure of the mileage of the short range.
And I think when I think of short term and you're testing these missiles, it wouldn't be that much more difficult if you're testing these short range missiles with the idea of going intermediate to long. You would be able to do your testings on short range to get away with it, to stay within, by maybe knowing you only have to do a few keystrokes with today's technology in order to be successful in a long range missile. Or is it?
Well, you know, it's missile size. Here's where size often matters. you know, the a lot of the shorter range missiles are indeed smaller than, you know, the longer or longest range intercontinental ballistic missiles, which just essentially carry more fuel that allow the longer trip. But I don't know what kind of guidance systems some of these weapons have now that might allow warheads. I mean, these hypersonic systems that are on the verge of being rolled out by U.S. and Russia, you know, apparently, you know, can the structure that the warheads are inside of apparently can go a long way. So It is unsettling, and it's certainly, you know, especially now that the U.S. is formally withdrawn from, you know, the intermediate range nuclear forces treaty with Russia. That's a scary thing. I think it's just a destabilizing,
well,
you know, move.
To me, he's being defiant. And my question is, I would have thought that he has all the abilities in the past, why would he have to test any more short range? I mean, come on. How much more can you perfect the short range? I mean, you'd think he'd already have that down and
perfected. Is this just, you know, his way of you know, trying to remind the South Koreans? I mean, China was within, parts of China is within a short distance. I mean, it's. I just can't believe that Xi Jinping is happy about these ongoing tests as well.
But the thing of it is, I don't think he doesn't have to flex his muscles to China. You know, he doesn't have to flex his muscles to you know, and supposedly with South Korea, they have a more of a budding relationship than, so I don't know why he would have to flex his muscles to South Korea. I mean, supposedly they're, you know, they were working on unless something has happened to reverse that relationship. Japan's another story. But so I don't know who he's flexing his muscles to show that he has these capabilities in the short term.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
Because if he's flexing them at us or China or Russia, he's stamped out in a...
I know.
You know, in a second. I mean, it's a scary, whatever, but...
So, I mean, he's saying, you can't, I'm going to do what I'm going to do anyway. I'm going to, So anyway, tell us about the nuclear arms treaty. We talked about this before, so I guess it's just been finalized.
The U.S. formally has withdrawn as of today the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, which was negotiated decades ago with Russia, which bans ground-launched medium-range missiles with a range of 310 to 3,400 miles. It was the 1987 Reagan-era treaty ended after Moscow refused to destroy its new intermediate-range SSC-8 cruise missile that Washington said violated this treaty. And, the Pentagon has said the SSC-8 can be tipped with conventional or nuclear explosives. No surprise, our president announced back in February that he would end the agreement unless Russia mothballed this new missile system. At the time, Trump added that if Russia didn't comply, the U.S. would move ahead with developing our own military response options, which presumably, means that, we'll build the same thing, but perhaps, better. Pompeo, our Secretary of State, said, Russia is solely responsible for the treaty's demise, and said that U.S. efforts to seek compromise had been continuously rejected by the Kremlin. His statement read that, dating back at least to the mid-2000s, Russia's developed, produced, flight tested, and now fielded multiple battalions of its non-compliant missile. Russia's short and medium range missiles are viewed as a particular threat to its neighboring countries in Eastern Europe, many of them former Soviet states. These weapons can be quickly launched, leaving, the target or country region that it's, intended for with little to no response time.
Well, I guess we're getting closer and closer to, having some sort of an agreement, I guess. But there's the intelligence with Afghanistan. You have the senior U.S. military and intelligence officials. And we'll conclude this article. We're heading right into a break. This hour is going by extremely fast.
It's Friday.
Friday fast. And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. These commercials will go by fast also. Please stay tuned. Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Each and every heart is food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen, and we were talking about Afghanistan heading into the break, and about, this is a critical point in President Trump's administration, this debate over whether American troops stay or withdraw. And American military commanders in Afghanistan have described the Islamic State affiliate there as a growing problem that is capable of inspiring and directing attacks in Western countries. But intelligence officials in Washington disagree, arguing that the group is mostly incapable of exporting terrorism worldwide. And the officials believe that the Islamic State in Afghanistan, known as Islamic State Khorasan, remains a regional problem and is more of a threat to the Taliban than to the West. You know, Dave, you know, we can't win over there, so we may as well get out.
Yeah, you know, I know that's it's such a difficult issue to those who have good intentions and essentially agree with you, but who, on the other hand, fear that just, you know, a complete withdrawal will, you know, leave it worse than how it was before we landed there. But geez, it's like the wild, wild west in nearly prehistoric times.
Russia couldn't do it. We're not going to be able to do it. It's a different mindset. It's a different tribe. It's tribalism. It's you know, they're going to fight. So, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Let them fight.
I know. I know what you're saying. Well,
yeah,
it'll be
the only thing that we'd be able to do to really stop it is you go over and you drop a nuke on them, get them out. But nobody's going to do that. It's, you know, it's. But anyway.
Yep. So I don't know where that will leave us, but I don't know. We're gonna be finding out, and certainly next year's presidential election, I think, will keep the focus on particularly Afghanistan, but I think Iraq as well, you know, the candidates ramp up their, you know, their desire to be, you know, the nominee on the one hand, and, you know, then to be president on the other. It's going to be a very contentious year. More so than it has been, I fear, with just so much money in the game. There'll be ads ad nauseum, probably worse and as negative as ever before.
Yeah, well, I don't think they have much interest in foreign policy. Their interest is we get a bunch of free stuff. But anyway, let's go in and talk about your article for this week, your blog. And again, it's we're going to talk. You wrote about negative interest rates.
I did. Yeah, in Monday's newsletter, our blog will be out after this program, where we talk about gold's most recent rise and rising, in fact, to nearly 6-year highs. But, you know, with attention on, you know, in the U.S. anyway, on the Fed this week, and Europeans' focus on, you know, European central bank rate decisions, I thought that a look at negative interest rates could be instructive for and timely for listeners. Now, these two, Simon Kennedy and Craig Sterling, write in an August article that negative interest rates from central banks come with costs. Many economists blame the Fed and its global counterparts for squeezing banks, punishing savers, and keeping dying companies on life support and fueling a potentially unsustainable increase in asset prices. Well, yeah. Well, this hasn't been lost on policymakers at the European Central Bank. We'll call them the ECB, as they're known as, who pushed a key rate below zero 5 years ago already. But then making money cheaper is the main tool. Virtually all central banks have to boost sluggish growth, especially since they aren't getting a lot of help from governments these days.
Well, I think everybody pretty much knows what a negative interest rate is, Dave, but can you, for those that don't?
Well, you know, don't be offended, listeners. You know, when a published interest rate is negative, we have negative rates, nominal interest rates. The real rate of interest is simply the nominal rate minus inflation. You know, if the nominal Fed funds rate is 2.5% and inflation is 2%, then the real Fed funds rate is 0.5. Real interest rates in the U.S. have been negative fairly often, including most of the time since 2009. The main problem comes in choosing which measure of inflation to apply, you know, because the calculation of inflation is so objective and easy to manipulate. Is it the CPIU, the CPIW, the PCE, core or non-core? Is it, you know, John Williams' alternative CPI, you know, using the old methodologies of the 80s and 90s, which is probably more accurate? Options are boundless. But, you know, in an article about the use of negative interest rates, former Fed Chair Ben Bernanke, Melody's good friend, wrote, "The fundamental economic constraint on how negative interest rates can go is that beyond a certain point, people will just choose to hold currency, which pays zero interest." Goes on to say it's not convenient or safe for most people to hold large amounts of currency, but at a sufficiently negative interest rate, banks or other institutions could profit from holding cash for a fee on behalf of customers. Based on calculations of how much it would cost banks to store large quantities of currency in their vaults, the interest rate paid on bank reserves in the U.S. could not practically be brought lower, than about negative 0.035%.
Well, you know, Mario Draghi, he's the outgoing European Central Bank president. He complained that, and it's always interesting, they only complain as they're leaving office. They never say these things while they're in office.
Yeah, about
They'd be fired, that's why. But he did complain that the monetary policy had taken on a disproportionate burden in recent years.
No. Hey, acknowledging what? They can't do it alone or they can't do it at all? Yeah, I mean, he and others warn that when the next major downturn hits, governments will, at a minimum, will need to play a bigger role in aiding growth with fiscal stimulus. Christine Lagarde, the outgoing head of the International Monetary Fund and Draghi's heir apparent at the ECB, has urged Germany, for example, which tends to have budget surpluses, to cut taxes and raise spending there. Yeah, thanks for nothing, right? The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, proposes that Euro nations coordinate fiscal stimulus in some countries with structural reform in others in tandem with looser monetary policy. The OECD estimates that that kind of an effort could raise GDP growth by 0.75%, both this year and next.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because this just confirms to everybody. I mean, a lot of people still think central banks are government, part of the government, but they're not. And here they talk about that central banks and governments should have to work more closely together. There you go. They're not the same, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, really. Go figure. Well, we know that could be a problem in countries like the U.S. where central bank independence or the perception thereof has been a long tradition. And that's despite more recent pressure coming from the president of the United States. There's this one professor at Stony Brook University, Stephanie Kelton, who said greater coordination between fiscal and monetary authorities is almost certainly the wave of the future. Now, she's an advocate of modern monetary theory, very controversial, rightly so, which says, among other things, that lawmakers, not central bankers, should take the lead in managing economies via spending and taxes.
That's what lawmakers were supposed to.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's just giving it back to they're too lazy anyway, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if only it were a matter of laziness. I mean, but politics being politics, politicians being politicians, doing the right thing isn't a frequent, much less consistent practice here in the U.S. and you know, elsewhere. In fact, in the U.S., Congress's 2017 tax cuts and subsequent spending agreements in 2018 and 2019, you know, at a time when the economy might call for less stimulus, not more, show that our elected leaders too often just get it wrong. So government might not always be a good, much less the best partner in doing the right things right. Unfortunately, the same can be said for central banks too.
Well, we all, you're going to get me all fired up here in this last segment, Dave.
Hey, you know, it's Friday. Let's go out with a bang, Melody.
But you know what? It's just this is perfect, because what it's saying is they're grasping for straws.
Yeah.
They're talking about a new monetary theory, that they need a new monetary system because the one that we have is about to go belly up. It's not working anymore, because fiat currencies don't work. They work for a short period of time. People get wealthy. You know, it does what it's supposed to do in the beginning, but in the end, it collapses, and the citizens of the country are the ones who get taxed with it. And our taxes continue to rise. Inflation continues to rise. Our purchasing power decreases. And here we are, and it's the same program. And that's why all the other countries who have tried fiat currencies have failed. And the only reason that ours have lasted this long is because it was tied to oil. It was tied to the Saudis. We gave them promises of protecting them, of protection, in order for them to sell oil in the U.S. dollars, the U.S. dollar becoming the reserve currency, and voila, here we are in today's world where other countries don't want the dollar. It's going to lose value, it's going to tank, and in the meantime, now we're having, you know, these, you know, people writing books, writing papers. This lady is an advocate of this modern monetary theory, but Dave, what they talk about on this is, you know, that it's a recipe for spiraling government debt. Well, we already have it. We already have spiraling government debt. We're going to have rampant inflation. Well, we already do.
It's football's equivalent of the old Statue of Liberty trick play, where in this case, it's just trying to redirect people's attention away from the issue, which, as you stated, is tying the dollar to oil and saying it's something completely different. And, you know, I mean, the best move that's left for the Fed and other central banks, at least in the short run, is a return to a new gold standard. But in lieu of that, I guess, pie in the sky, wishful thinking, you know, to get growth going again, central bankers who have pushed rates below zero, they're going to have to get more ambitious and creative. And I just don't know that policymakers, certainly in Congress, are going to be willing to do their jobs. I don't know they're in a position where they can, because of the dysfunction, the uncivility, the dark money in politics. But we know that negative interest rates increase the cost of doing businesses for banks, which find it hard to pass on those costs to borrowers, therefore weakening the banking system. You know, this has the effect, on the other hand, of encouraging people to buy gold and hold it outside of banks. You know, governments can stop printing fiat money, but they can't easily pass or ban physical currency like gold and silver, although they have. Today's negative interest rate environment, we should be more concerned about the return of our money rather than the return on it. And compared with negative interest rates, it's clear why people are rediscovering the value of holding gold. It tends to perform well in declining or negative real interest rate environments. Thus, the more the Fed and other central banks around the world move to negative interest rates, the more gold's going to go up because there's really no carrying cost. So, ladies and gentlemen, if there's one thing you take from this article, it's this: negative real interest rates are good for gold.
And it tells you we're just heading into a territory where gold prices are not going to go down, and it's performing just exactly the way it's supposed to, and all the reasons why you're supposed to own it. Give us a call at 800-375-4188. We'll be back on Monday, so ladies and gentlemen, be safe this weekend. And until then, God bless. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Any left for me. That's too bad.